This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Om Sadam to our listeners. Welcome to Saturday News number 996. Today we'll be hearing part 1 of 3 on the topic of faith. This was a talk given by Biprat Prem some years ago. So let's have a Ganesh Bhajan and we'll get straight into part 1.
Namo Vratapataye, Namo Ganapataye, Namo Pramadapataye.
Swami who speaks, and it is Swami who listens through each one of us. Salam to all of you. It's wonderful to be with all of you here. Thank you for this opportunity to connect with all of you. I hope all of you are keeping safe wherever you are. And whatever is the situation that Swami creates around us, he also gives us the opportunity of having satsang and all that. And I think we are very, very grateful to that. Whenever I'm invited to talk, especially to an audience of elders, my sadam to all the elders, my sadam to all the sisters and brothers, I often wonder, what is it that I can tell you about Swami that probably you already don't know? Especially seniors, you know, whose association with Swami is as many years as I've been around, right? So what is it about Swami that I can convey to all of you that you probably would not know already? But having said that, who can claim that they know Swami enough? That's a question that often comes to mind. And is there anybody you can say that I have grasped enough about Swami, I've understood enough about Swami, and there is nothing more to know? All the scriptures, you know, be it the Sanatana Dharma scriptures or the Bible, the Quran, one common thing about all of them is their description of God. They describe God as the unknowable, some entity that cannot be grasped through our mundane comprehension, through our perceptions. Having said that, why do we then try to understand Swami at all? Why do we even make the attempt? There is this very beautiful verse from our scriptures. I often like to go back to that. It says, Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati. Those who try to understand God eventually transform into divinity in the process of trying to understand God itself. Right? That's a quote which is very popular. Swami used to quote it very often. And even as I'm narrating this, I'm reminded of what one old devotee once told me. And this was an analogy that Swami had given him. Swami was saying that, you know, when you first come to Swami, in the first few years when you come to Swami, Swami will make himself predictable. Swami will make himself accessible through being predictable. So you would know that Swami likes this. If you do this, Swami will be upset. If you do this, Swami will be happy. If you sit here, Swami will come and talk to you. If you do this particular thing, you will get an interview, right? Even as students, we have a lot of these things. And many of these things also seem to work, right? So Swami was telling this devotee once that I am like a wild horse that is sitting in solitude. A wild horse, when it's left alone, it seems very calm, right? It's quietly sitting in one corner. So Swami is saying that you will see that wild horse and you will say, this horse is not so wild after all. Now, probably I can mount it and I can go for a ride. So you'll come close to the horse. The horse will still be sitting there without any movement. And then you'll become adventurous enough to try to mount it. And the horse will still keep quiet. And then after you get onto the horse, Swami said the horse will start becoming a little violent. He'll try to shrug you off. And Swami said that that's precisely what I do. He said, when you first come to me, I make myself very accessible. You'll feel that, oh, Swami is so warm and Swami is so welcoming. Then I will shake you a little bit. And then you will think that, oh, I don't know this Swami. I don't understand this Swami. And then Swami said, but don't worry, I will not shake you off. And then I'll calm down. And then again, you will get the feeling that now I've got a grip of Swami. Now I understand Swami. And then when you get that feeling again, Swami said, I will shake a little more firmly, a little more vigorously. So this whole journey of trying to understand Swami is like that. Swami just lets us understand enough so that we get enough confidence not to stop. Right? If we cannot understand at all, if Swami is absolutely an enigma, then we will not make efforts to try to understand Swami. So he kind of lets us feel that, yeah, now I know Swami. Now I understand Swami. Right? As speakers, all of us try to do that. You know, this is what Swami likes. And, you know, when a devotee did like this, Swami said like this. We try to describe Swami by a few handful of incidents, and there's nothing more unintelligible than that. But that's what we always do, because that is the whole process. But how do you best know Swami, right? When you say that Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati, there will come a time when you completely understand Swami, and that will happen only when you have completely become Swami. So how do you best understand Swami? Is there a way? Is there a method? Is there a technique? Is there a hint? There is this very beautiful shloka in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna tells how you can understand me, right? And that's, I think, a hint for all of us, how you can understand Swami. The shloka goes, many of you may be familiar with that. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tattvatah. He says, through bhakti you can understand me. Bhaktiya mam abhijanati. Through bhakti alone you can understand me. And then he qualifies that understanding. He says, Yavan yaschasmi tatvatah. Which means you come to know me as I am. As my tattva. Right? It's not a superficial knowledge of God. It is not a frivolous idea of what Swami is. But Swami says, as I am, as my reality, as my tattva, you come to know me. And then the second line, he says, tato mam tattvato nyatva vishate tat anantaram. Having known me as my tattva, you become part of me. You enter into me, literally. Right? That's the Brahmavit, Brahmaiva Bhavati part. So here is Swami himself giving the hint. How do you understand Swami? How do you figure out this phenomenon that we've had this opportunity to come cross paths with? He says it can be understood through bhakti. But honestly speaking, that's not enough data for us, because bhakti is as much cryptic and as much complex to understand as God himself. So what is bhakti? You know, when you join for a degree, join into a college for a degree, or you sign up for a course, you cannot choose the criteria for receiving the degree, right? The institution decides what is the criteria for you to receive that degree. In the same manner, when we come to Swami, you and I cannot qualify what is bhakti. What is bhakti has to be qualified by the one who is going to give us the certificate that here is my devotee, here is my bhakta. So if we really want to understand what is bhakti, I think we'll have to turn to Swami's definition of what is bhakti. Has Swami given a definition which we can fall back upon? Most certainly he has, and he has done it very, very early in his avataric life. Way back in 1947, when Swami wrote that beautiful letter to his brother with a lot of declarations, a lot of promises to all of us, Swami makes this wonderful statement, right? Where he says that I will take care of the whole world, I'll hold your hand and I'll take you to your path and all of that. And Swami says in Telugu, Manchi cheddalu kuda manasulo samamuga bhavinju chundute bhakti naku. You might have any definition of bhakti, but if you ask me what is my definition of bhakti, Swami says, Manchi cheddalu kuda, good and bad, pain and pleasure, happiness and sorrow. Manasulo samamuga bhavinchu chundute. If you are able to see them as being equal, that is devotion for me. Right? So this is Swami's definition of what is bhakti. To treat good and bad equal-mindedly, with equal equanimity, is devotion as explained by Swami. If you really look at this definition, if you look at what Swami says about surrender, what Swami says about Sharanagati, Atma Nivedanam, it is the same definition, right? Whenever we are invited to give talks, thanks to all the Samarpan sessions that centers like Dharmakshetra do, we listen to a lot of those talks. That's where we gather all our stories from. So I've been careful not to choose stories that I've heard in Dharmakshetra Samarpan. But nevertheless, I think all of you must have heard that very beautiful episode that Bhagya sir narrated about being a full-time devotee. Right? When Swami says, what is it to be a part-time devotee and what is it to be a full-time devotee? Swami gives the same definition. He says to have equal-mindedness. Ups and downs come in life, to see them as being same. That is devotion. So if you look at it that way, for Swami, there is no difference between bhakti and sharanagati. There is no distinction between devotion and surrender. It is we who make that distinction. For Swami, you are a devotee if you have surrendered. If you have not surrendered, you are not a devotee, going by the definition that Swami has given. Our definition of devotion is we listen to a bhajan, we shed a few tears, we feel that that's devotion. On Saturday, Sunday, we go out and we feed a few poor people. We think that is devotion. Or we join satsangs like this and listen to beautiful stories of Swami. And yes, we definitely emotionally feel connected to Swami, right? But is that devotion? I think Swami says no. There is this very beautiful episode. I often quote this in most of the satsangs. Swami has written this in the book Ramakatha Raswaini. This is the first interaction between Sugriva and Lord Rama, right? In his quest to find where Mother Sita is, He comes to Kishkinta, he meets Hanuman, Hanuman takes him to Sugriva. And Sugriva tells about his whole plight, how Vali has treated him very badly and fairly and all of that. And so they decide that they're going to make a friendship pact. Rama has got to help Sugriva and Sugriva will help Rama find Mother Sita. But Sugriva is not too sure whether Rama is capable enough to deal with his brother, because his brother is very mighty. We all know the story of the tiff between the two of them. We know how Vali was much more stronger than Ravana himself, right? And they had a hint that they're going to battle Ravana at that time. So Sugriva had this doubt, you know, will Rama really be able to deal with my brother? So it is at that time Rama kind of figures out and intuitively knows that this is the thought that's troubling Sugriva. And he says, I know that you want some proof of my might. So you think of a way of testing my abilities. So then Sugriva comes up with this idea. He said that, you know, when we were children, we used to have a lot of these games between us. And one of the things that we did was we used to go to a place where there are a row of palm trees and we would fire arrows at them. And we would see how many trees can one arrow that we shoot fell. So he says that, you know, I managed to put down 3 trees. But Sugriva was so strong that he was able to put down 5 trees. So he says, probably we'll use the same test. I'll take you to a place where there are a row of palm trees and you shoot an arrow. Let's see how it works. So they take Rama to a place and there are 7 trees in a row. And each one of those trees are 5 times bigger than the tree that Vali had shot down. So Sugriva says, here are a row of palm trees. And in his mind, he's thinking that these palm trees are so strong that even if 2 trees fall, Rama is stronger or strong enough to battle with Vali. Rama smiles at this little frivolous test that is being given to him and he takes an arrow and Swami writes that when he shoots, the 7 trees fall, the 7 trees are taken and are thrown beyond the mountains, crashing past the small hillocks that come on the way. And the moment Sugriva sees this, he realizes that Rama is not an ordinary prince. He realizes that this is the avatar, the Lord himself has come down. So instantly Sugriva falls down to his knees and he says, oh Lord Rama, you are the great one and you're the Lord himself. And then he says, you know, what a petty thing I'm coming to you for. I don't want to battle with my brother. I don't want my kingdom back. I have found you and I want to serve you all my life. And that's more than enough. I don't want anything else. Forget about the battle with Vali and all of that. So Rama tells him, it's all right, but I've given you my word. So let's call Vali for a battle and let's meet him. So we all know how the story goes. Vali comes and the first battle, Rama is not able to make out. He doesn't shoot. Sugriva comes back completely battered, right? He's completely wounded and he's beaten black and blue by Vali. And he comes back and he says, Rama, you ditched me, right? I trusted you and this is what you do to me. And he said, at least had you told me that you're not prepared, I would have gone more prepared, you know, as though he had the ability to do that. And he kind of loses himself and he says, oh, why have you done this to me? And how do I trust you as a friend and all that? Then Swami writes very beautifully that Rama says, Sugriva, what do I do? I couldn't see the distinction between you and Vali. He says, I couldn't see the distinction between you and Vali. And Swami says, these were not ordinary words. These had a subtle meaning. One meaning is, Vali was also a devotee of Rama. He says, so when you both stand, I can't see one greater than the other. And the other thing is, both of them are monkeys, right? And both of them have that wavering faith or wavering devotion. So Rama says, I couldn't find the difference between the two of you. What do I do? So then he puts the garland. Swami says that garland represents the extra grace that God gives to a devotee even before he has begun to deserve it. Right? And that speaks of the chance that most of us get, right? Swami gives us something a little more than we deserve, hoping that one day we would transform our lives and come to deserve that. So the story goes that Rama puts this garland around Vali and, Sugriva and goes for the battle. Vali is killed at this time. But before this, another interesting event happens. When Sugriva comes back with his body completely wounded, Rama pacifies him and Rama tells him, don't worry, we'll take a battle again and that time I will help you. And he begins to caress Sugriva's limbs wherever he is wounded. And even as Rama puts his hand through those different wounds, the wounds heal just by the stroke of Rama's hands on those limbs. And the moment this happens, Sugriva says, "Oh my God, Rama, what did I do? I scolded you. I forgot that who you are. You're this great God." And again, he starts, "I don't want the kingdom. I don't want my family. I'm happy to serve you. I'll be at your lotus feet." And then Rama tells him, "Sugriva, don't think that this is an expression of devotion. This is not devotion. This is merely your sentiments. These are merely your emotions." He clearly says, this is not devotion. To extol the Lord when something good happens and to start cursing him and to get upset with him when something bad happens is not devotion. It is only emotion. And I'm not touched by this. So he says, so get up, prepare yourself, go for the battle. But you know, the beauty is these are words of Swami, right? And when Swami writes this in the Ramakatha Rasvaini, I think these are not for Sugriva. These are for you and me, right? These are words that Swami is telling each one of us devotees, that one day you get a promotion in your work, you come and sit in bhajans, and if you're lost in ecstasy, that's not devotion. Or one day when something really bad happens and you say that I'm not going to turn up for any of Swami's work anymore because something bad has happened to me. Devotion cannot be like that, right? That kind of a flip-flop cannot be any sign of devotion. There's this very beautiful episode narrated by one of Swami's devotees. Her article is very popular in our website. Many of you must have read that article series. It's by Rani Subramaniam, a very old devotee. Very profound and deep interactions with Swami. She narrates this very beautiful incident once. It so happens that at one point, she's very unwell. Swami is in the city of Madras. So she comes to see Swami there with her husband. And she's just recovering from this illness that she's had. So Swami tells her that, you know, why don't you come to Vrindavan and stay in Vrindavan for a while till you recoup completely and then you can go back. I think they were at that point in from Delhi or Pune or one of these places in north. So she was very happy. So from Chennai, by the time Swami comes to Vrindavan, she also comes to Vrindavan. And when she comes to Vrindavan, she has this royal treatment waiting for her. There is a Sevadal who is coming to the hall and asking, "Who is Rani Ma? Swami is waiting for you." Picks her up from the devotees section. Swami has made arrangements for her to stay in Swami's own bungalow. In Swami's bungalow, Swami has given her one of the rooms. And I mean, which devotee would not love such treatment, right? So Swami gives her all of this. So one day Swami walks into her room at 7 a.m. and Swami takes her to one of the balconies in Swami's bungalow. And Swami asks her, "What do you want? Today you ask me for anything, I'm going to give you. What do you want?" So she's taken aback and she was not prepared for this. So she looks at Swami and she says, "Swami, how do I be an ideal devotee? How do I become an ideal devotee?" So Swami looked at her and asked, "So you want me to tell you what you should do to become an ideal devotee?" And she said, "Yes, Swami, I want to know from you. What should I do to become an ideal devotee?" And then Swami went on to explain whatever we've been speaking about. Swami spoke about the equanimity which defines devotion. And Swami told, "See, one day when you come to me, I'm going to give you royal treatment. You'll be my favorite devotee. I'll roll out the red carpet for you. We'll be waiting for you. I'll speak very lovingly to you. On another day when you come to me, I'll say, get lost. I don't want to look at your face." And Swami said, "If you feel delighted or elated when that happens, when I give you the royal treatment, and when you feel that I don't love you when I give you the other treatment, that is not devotion." And without stopping there, Swami went on to describe an event which happened in her own life a few months back. It's a very beautiful episode where she was saying that Swami was in Vrindavan that time. She was staying with her sister in Bangalore city. And then Swami went away to, I think, Hyderabad or Madras or somewhere. So there was this one Westerner whom Swami had permitted to stay in bungalow when Swami was away. And this Westerner wanted to learn bhajans. And she turned to Ranima, and Ranima said, "I'll be very happy to teach you." So even when Swami was not there, this devotee would take a train and a bus and multiple conveyances like that from the city of Bangalore. Those days it was not easy to come all the way to Vrindavan in Whitefield. So she would come all the way only so that she could come and teach this devotee bhajans, right? So she was doing this for a few weeks. And one fine day when she comes, this Westerner devotee, she comes and says, "Ranima, today I don't want to learn bhajans because Swami has come back. And today also happens to be my birthday, so I don't want to spend time in the classes. I want to spend time with Swami." So Ranima says, "All right, it's okay." But then she says, "You have come all the way from Bangalore. You wait here. I will go inside and ask Swami if you can come inside. And I'm sure Swami will have no problem with that." So she goes inside and she asks Swami, "Swami, Ranima is here. She's been coming all the while when you're away teaching me bhajans. Can I call her inside?" And immediately Swami's response is, "No, tell her to go back to city." So then she starts pleading, "Swami, why are you saying this? She's come all the way. She'll be very happy and delighted if you give her darshan." Swami says, "No, tell her to go back." And the few other devotees were there, they also tried to plead with Swami and said, "Swami, your devotee, you know, she's not like some a stranger or something. Why don't you allow her inside?" And Swami kept saying, "No, ask her to go back." So this foreigner comes out and she looks at Ranima and says, "You know, I tried so hard, but Swami is saying that you shouldn't come." So Ranima says, "All right." She gets into the train and she says all through that journey back to the city, she was in tears. She says, "Swami, why is it you're doing this to me? Swami, you don't love me. Swami, why, why is your heart dried up like this? What will you lose if you give me one darshan as though I'm asking for your property?" You know, all these kind of thoughts. And she was, there was nobody around. So she was sobbing and she was crying and she was very upset with the whole thing. After some time, after she had cried her heart out, and suddenly this thought comes to her, "Why should I cry? You know, Swami knows what is best. Swami knows what is right. I probably cannot understand that. Swami knows what is right. Why should I feel upset about that?" And when this thought comes, she calms down and then she's fine after that. So Swami narrated this entire episode of how she came teaching and how Swami treated her. After narrating all of this, Swami said, "So the first thought that you had was, Swami doesn't love you and you're upset with Swami. The second thought that you had was, Swami knows what is best." Swami told her that first thought should not have come at all. Your first thought should have been, "So what? Swami knows what is right. I will accept whatever Swami gives." Swami said that should have been your first thought. And if when that becomes your first thought in any situation, then you become an ideal devotee. So this is what Swami very, very clearly says what is devotion. But the question is, how do we get there?
Okay, dear listeners, next week we'll find out how do we get there from Prem. Saram to you.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.